Welcome back to the Round Table on WAMC. Coming up on 14 minutes after 9 o'clock. It's a Thursday morning. We start off the show. The first hour is dedicated to the Round Table panel. If you have never tuned in, nice to have you with us. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Too much technology in the room. Alan Shartok batting around a tablet. Good morning, Alan.
And good morning to you, sir. You look lovely today in your blue shirt and rather, old-fashioned rayon tie.
I find myself uncomfortable with your remarks. We'll have to go to HR after the show.
Okay. Also, Alan has turned over a new leaf. He says he's going to be nice now. I'm very suspicious of that.
It's like the Grinch who stole Christmas. I don't buy it for a second.
You know what Roselle says, right? Whenever he's nice to somebody, he's going after somebody else.
Right. So he's being nice to me, so you two need to watch it. And you two being Rosemary Armeo back again. That's a record for you, 5 days in a row now?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. And we're joined today by essayist, author, editor, and activist, a regular on Fridays, Barbara Smith. Nice to have you here, Barbara.
Thank you so much, and hello, everybody.
Okay, so the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Lots of things to discuss today. And we'll kick it off in New York. An official familiar with the investigation says New York's attorney general is examining statements by ExxonMobil and Peabody Energy to determine whether they deceived investors about climate change causes and impacts. Officials say a subpoena was sent Wednesday to Dallas-based Exxon after a year-long review of shareholder disclosures. The official was not authorized to publicly discuss the probes and spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's office sought similar documents on climate change from St. Louis-based Peabody in 2013. A spokesman for Schneiderman also declined comment yesterday. An Exxon spokesman told the Associated Press the company received the subpoena and rejects the allegations it suppressed climate change research. Peabody says it continues to work with the Attorney General's office regarding its disclosures. This is, now they're using the Martin Act here, right?
I don't know what the Martin Act is.
I believe it was an act that allowed a rather wide berth for prosecution of financial fraud.
Yes, but remember now, this is the state attorney general
right.
Yeah,
New York. You know that we now have this new how you get to be governor stepladder. And one of them is you get to be attorney general, then you get to be governor. So Spitzer and Cuomo and now Schneiderman. But Schneiderman has been a bit of an unknown. He's done some very important work, but he hasn't really gotten out of there. This has created an international furor. This is all over the place. And it has to do with what, a lot of people are really concerned about, which is global warming and the way in which we are treating our environment. And all of a sudden, he is on the front page of everybody and everything. So this is good for him. It's also a very important subject. You know, Ray and Rosemary and Barbara, I'm always fascinated by somehow this stuff gets out, right? This stuff gets out, and then you see it in the news. And then you go to the attorney general, and you say, can you comment on this lawsuit you're bringing? And he goes, no comment. But don't you see? As Festus would say, don't you see? Somebody put it out there.
Yeah, I covered courts. It happens all the time. It did come out from him. But, Alan, I find it really interesting that you're seeing in Schneiderman's act a political motive, whereas you love the federal prosecutor who's going after state officials. Here's a state attorney general who's going after possible corporate malfeasance. Sounds like the tobacco companies all over again,
trying to
fund research that denies what their own scientists are telling them, that nicotine caused terrible addiction and they were spiking cigarettes. Now we have Exxon funding research that says no, climate change is ephemeral, if it's real at all. So how come you don't think it's wonderful that he's going after it, an idealistic? And,
oh, did I misspeak?
Well, I just
because
see a difference.
I certainly
that you think
it
the,
is wonderful.
You think the state attorney general has a political motive, whereas Preet Bharara, the federal prosecutor going after possibly corrupt state officials, is just a god.
No, I think you're putting words in my mouth,
oh,
to be honest with you, Rosemary.
So and much I, for the kinder, gentler
Shartok. We'll hear from listeners.
I always resent it when you do that. No, I think it's great that he's doing it. I think, he's a politician. And if you know about the duck, right? You know about the duck, right?
Yes, I know about the duck.
The
I've
duck
heard
who
you
walks
many times.
And quacks.
Yes.
That's what you do when you're a politician. But, and by the way, he's not the first person who's been in a state office, who has gone after a national corporation.
Who is the first one?
I don't exactly remember, but there were lots of them.
Well, the Martin Act angle, I think, is interesting because it's based on financial. So they're saying, Schneiderman, as I understand the articles that are out in the New York Times.
Exxon hurt stockholders.
They deceived stockholders.
And those stockholders are right here on Wall Street.
Right, which is, that's his jurisdiction. That's how he gets into it.
Well, it's one way.
May I ask, is it that they were simultaneously funding under the table, so to speak, or, subterranean funding of these climate
deniers.
Alec,
yeah. At the very same time that they were putting out really positive stuff about, climate change is a problem and we really want to change it.
Well, it's funny. There's a real dichotomy here because, and as pointed out in this article in the New York Times, which I think is from this morning, more oil companies could join ExxonMobil as focus of climate investigations by Clifford Krause. As pointed out, and I'll quote, big American and European oil companies could point to efforts they have made to support renewable energy, perhaps clouding attempts by prosecutors to paint them as one-sided on the issue of climate change. So it may be tougher to paint them in one stripe.
But then you get to a wash, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I love what Rosemary said, before, because, this really does prove that the AG, is being very aggressive in the same way that Andrew Cuomo was very aggressive, and that Elliot Spitzer was very aggressive.
No, I think it's a bold move, and I think his angle is he's going after, not that Exxon and others were saying, oh, we're going to help you with climate change. That's playing both ends. They want to profit both from renewable energy and from their old fossil fuel. But he's saying they knew their own research, their internal research was showing that, we're having an effect on climate change. At the same time, they were funding research that would counter that.
And by the way, there's all kinds of stuff now coming out that Lyndon Johnson was told and didn't make a big enough deal out of it.
Was told what?
About the climate change.
You said Lyndon Johnson?
Yes, Lyndon Johnson.
That's not day before yesterday.
No, not at all.
It goes way, way back. Mm-hmm. But, you made the analogy, I think, Rosemary, either Bob or you, that it was the smoking, analogous to the smoking thing.
Tobacco industry.
And really, it isn't. I mean, in the short run, the smoking will certainly kill people. In the long run, the climate change will probably kill a lot more people than
it's analogous in that the tobacco companies knew nicotine was hurting people and was funding and promoting the idea that smoking was fine.
Rosemary, I have to say we got a letter. We're not ready for the letters. Ray has.
Yeah, could I just take a break?
Alan is right.
But it does say that she's sitting there, and the only thing that people see on the video,
the live stream,
is her nose.
And what a lovely nose it is. Let's take a break. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Tell you what, we'll shift some chairs around. We'll change some camera angles. Maybe we'll get a crane shot, and we'll be back.
Get the crane.
Support for WAMC comes from KW Home, East Hampton, Massachusetts, offering home furnishings and interior design services featuring furniture, rugs, lighting, and window treatments, kwhome.net. The Opelka Gallery at the Sage Colleges, now hosting From Concept to Console, Art and Aesthetics in Video Game Design, and Related Films and Events, sage.edu/opelka. And Shawangunk Wine Trails, Wreath Fineries at the Wineries, 3 holiday tour weekends, November 21st and 22nd, December 5th and 6th, and December 12th and 13th. Reservations at gunkswine.com.
Hello, everybody. It's the Roundtable on WAMC discussing Alan's dessert habits here.
Candy habits.
Your candy habits. Delicious.
Caramel. I don't like caramel.
Did you have leftovers from Halloween?
No.
No?
Oh, did we have them? Yeah, we had them this year.
So what, did you eat the candy?
No.
Oh, I did.
I don't.
Oh, it's great.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Well, my kids, they come back. They use pillowcases, and they come back full.
I'm not surprised.
And there's a certain amount of tariff that the parents are allowed to take. It's about 12%. So it works out pretty well.
So it is.
So what do you mean you're not surprised?
Oh, nothing. No, I'm not surprised that you indulge.
I see. The Roundtable is the program. Alan is here. Barbara Smith is here. Rosemary Armeo, who is now in the shot. And I got to say, you look radiant.
Thank you.
You look wonderful.
Gloria Swanson. Remember Gloria Swanson?
That's a chicken, right?
I'm ready,
I'm ready for my close-up.
That's right.
What is that? What's that joke about? I have a face for radio? That's it.
Yeah.
Not at all. That's
Alan's got a face for newspapers, which is even worse. Once again, the email address is roundtable
at
W. Yes, roundtable at WAMC.org. Some letters there, Alan?
Okay. Allison says, Ree, somehow this news gets, I remember when I sort of said, somehow the AG doesn't want to do comment.
The leak.
But okay. Give the credit to Inside Climate News, which broke the story with months of investigative work,
okay.
She says. All right. Thank you, Allison. Okay, and Tom, as always, our stage director here,
right,
says, why is Rosemary hiding?
Tom.
And
is Tom possibly a shut-in who has just, a Rosemary issue?
A little shrine in his bedroom with all my pictures.
I love Rosemary.
And you just
I'm only interested in robots.
You just gave me some criticism.
Me?
Yeah.
Fine.
Bill, who is a great guy, says, Ray just said it was Thursday morning. That explanation.
Oh, it's Friday.
It's Friday,
isn't
morning.
It?
Yeah.
Let me look at my script.
And then he said, "Is this live?"
It does say Friday. Yeah. I must have said it in the billboard, and then.
Yeah. Is this live?
It is live.
Alan, okay. Three items I thought might be of particular interest. Lane Murray offers analysis on today's jobs numbers. Why aren't we adding 516,000 jobs a month, he asks. Hint, regulations and new employment restrictions. I think also, let me just say, we're not going to read your whole letter, but I did think that that the street was very happy with the numbers of new jobs that were out there. If I was reading my paper correctly,
the rates dropped to 5%
this morning. Okay,
and again, that's not about anything we're talking about today.
No, not yet.
So don't write us about things we haven't talked about.
Well, you can.
You can, but why should you read them?
Because I may want to. Or I may not even know what I'm going to read until I start in the middle of the sentence.
I'll take answer B there. Okay, moving on.
Okay, that's what I got.
Okay, that's it. All right, so roundtable at WAMC.org. Very quickly, officials have released details of a sweeping Pacific Rim trade deal, setting the stage for a raucous debate in Congress. Among the questions it poses, will the pact promote U.S. exports and jobs, or will it expose more American workers to low-wage competition and give multinational corporations too much power? The U.S. reached the deal October 5th on the Trans-Pacific Partnership with 11 other Asia-Pacific countries. Under law, the president must give the public time to review the text before he signs the agreement and turns it over to Congress for approval. Only a couple of minutes here. Rosemary.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. It's 30 chapters, 6,000 pages. Nobody's gone through it all the way yet. They cannot do it in that amount of time. However, you can imagine that Republicans and probably Hillary Clinton's people are going through it minutely, looking for signs of sinister back deals and agreements that will justify the great hatred that TPP engendered. And in fact, it looks to be just what the president promised.
Okay, well, how much have you read of the 60,000 pages?
I've not read the pages. I'll look at some of it, but I have looked at reports about it to get ready for today.
Okay.
And basically, it would allow for human rights, for protection of wildlife that doesn't exist, unions in Vietnam. This is 12 countries would be part of it.
I love unions in Vietnam. You say to Vietnam, too. Okay, are you going to have unions? Yes.
Well, the importance of that, Alan, is that if they're union, their wages are going to go up. So the idea that American workers will have to compete against workers who earn less will go away over time because they're going to earn more, which is exactly what a trade agreement should do. And if I were Hillary Clinton, I'd be upset that I said I was against it. First, she was for it. Then she said, no, I changed my mind. I'm really against it because I didn't like the way it was negotiated. This is a deal I think she would have signed herself.
Hey, I got a question for you. Have you ever heard of a house union? In other words, they guarantee they're going to have a union. You said if you have a union, you have higher wages. Not necessarily.
That's the trend. Come on, that's the trend.
If you
outlaw unions in a country, you're going to keep them paying low wages and corporations are going to be in charge. The fact that this agreement sets up a deal for people in countries, third world countries, I think that's pejorative now.
You never heard of house unions? Yeah. You know, the cloak workers union is a so-and-so union. It's a union that was made for the bosses.
I don't think that's what this is about.
Well, yes. You see, the bosses in the union, in the old unions here in this country, sometimes set up, you know, house unions. But in the other, and it worked. But now the boss is the communist dictatorship in Vietnam.
Well, I hardly know what to say.
Well, I'm not for it. I wasn't for it. And I'm not going to read the 6,000 pages either.
Okay.
Unless they...
That's okay, because Rosemary will. So you're fine.
Well, but, I keep thinking that if there had been something glaringly in it, we would have heard it already, that some Republican
or
Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or all who were against it, for the right reason, that it was completely negotiated in secret. That's kind of, I don't support non-transparency. But when I look at it, this is actually a pretty great deal as far as trade pacts go.
But you're only seeing what various reporters and the administration are showing you. You haven't seen the nuts and bolts yet, right? How can you make that statement?
Well, because you put it on for today, which doesn't give anyone a time to look at.
Rosemary,
what I'm
saying, gave you this at 10 o'clock last night. You could have read all 60,000 pages by now. Oh, look at the time. We have to go to news. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, and Alan Shartok
so
on the panel.
So much serious discussion.
What? You don't like the BBC News?
No, that's fine.
All right.
I listen to it.
You'll have to right now. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On a Friday morning, it's 9:33. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel today, and what a panel it is. Oh, Rosemary Armeo is here again. Barbara Smith is here, and Alan Shartok as well. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. SUNY Plattsburgh paper apologizes for cartoon. This is from last week and the Inside Higher Ed. The editors of Cardinal Points, the student newspaper of the State University of New York's Plattsburgh campus, have apologized for a cartoon featuring a stereotypical image of a black person illustrating an article on minority admissions. The cartoon received widespread attention when the Daily Beast wrote an article about it titled "College Paper Prints the Most Racist Front Page in America." And our North Country Bureau Chief, Pat Bradley, is stationed in Plattsburgh and is covering the story. Pat, can you hear us up there? Hello?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Nice to have you here, Pat. Oh, gosh. You know what? Hang on just a sec. Just a point of contact.
Put them all up.
Everybody needs headphones to listen to you, and I forgot to give everybody headphones.
That's all right.
Everybody here, Pat?
No.
Good morning, guys.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody's nodding. All right, Pat, why don't you lay out the timetable of when this happened, generally what happened, and then I know some of our panel have some questions for you.
Okay, well, in the October 23rd issue of Cardinal Points, it's a weekly newspaper at the SUNY Plattsburgh campus, above the fold on the front page appeared a cartoon that is very controversial. If you haven't seen it, it depicts, as you mentioned, a very stereotypical... unfortunately, stereotypical black person. It is a black-faced, red-ground graduate with bulging eyes and the exaggerated smile. Adding insult to injury, he's clutching a diploma while strolling down a ghetto street that has boarded and broken windows. You've got the cracked foundations with graffiti all over walls and broken street signs and an old car on cement blocks. And this is just above a headline that says minority admission rates examined. Mm. So this, you know, the cartoon in itself, you know, does not really relate to, you know, minority admission rates. Plus, it's insulting to the minority campus members, and this has angered and insulted so many people on campus. There's already been several meetings about it, and last night the Student Association held a forum / meeting to discuss the issues that have come up over this cartoon.
And the editor-in-chief was there last night and didn't say much, right?
No, she made some opening comments, didn't say much while people were commenting, only had a couple comments at the end. She did talk to the media a bit afterwards, but, you know, she and the other editor are holding firm that they don't want to resign. She says that resigning would be taking the easy way out.
Okay, I want to introduce you to our panel. You know most of them. Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, and Alan Shartok are here. And if you don't mind, Pat, if you have a minute or two, maybe you can respond to some direct questions.
I want to do more than a question. I want to compliment Pat for her wonderful work up there and remind everybody that Plattsburgh is one of our major stations. So this is an important story to us.
I guess what I would like to know is the pattern and the trail of How did this all come about? Who found the cartoon? Where did the cartoon come from? What was their thought process as they chose it? How many people saw the cartoon before the newspaper was published? All of those things. This is boilerplate stereotyping and racism, and it just doesn't insult the students on the campus. It insults every black person who is subjected to it, including me.
Well, when I asked the editor last night how in the process, you know, this made it to the front page, because it's not just the editors, there's a staff there, she basically basically blew it off by saying, well, we have a small staff, so, you know, that's part of the problem.
Well, somebody made the decision.
And somebody found it.
Yeah. So,
it was done by a student artist. Somebody
you mean somebody created it?
Yeah, they created it.
Oh, so that's
it.
Even worse.
Yes.
That's
and
even worse.
Said, you know, well, you know, the graphic artist is no longer working for the paper.
But this,
so,
this
you know, it's like, okay, but you still have all of the other people that were working there,
right,
that, you know, saw this cartoon. Weren't any red flags raised? Well, and she kept saying, but we have a small staff.
Okay, well, explain the faculty involvement. Now, this is an independent paper, and there is some faculty oversight, but it's after the fact, after the you get critiqued, after the paper goes to press? Is that how it works?
Yes, that seems to be the way it has worked. This has been an independent newspaper. Even the student association, which funds it, is constrained as to how much oversight they have on this. They have a contract because many people have been saying, pull their funding. The student association president kept reiterating last night, we have a contract through the end of the year, so we can't pull the funding until perhaps next year when we redo the contract.
This is fascinating, I think, for a number of reasons. But, Rosemary, you're our resident participant, defender of press freedoms. I wondered if you could check in on this.
These independent student papers came about in the 70s when students who wanted to write about anti-war sentiment were constrained by faculty advisors who said no, and they were censored. So you have the newspaper at UAlbany is the same way, and I'm director of the journalism program, but our faculty have no involvement with that paper for just this sort of thing. And here's the problem, though. What are your choices? You have students who made terrible, terrible decisions. Are you going to punish and fire them? You've put them in basically a laboratory. They've made a bad mistake from which they will learn. This is great that it happened now when they're students.
All right. Well, let's actually let Pat go, and we'll pick this up. But I want to ask Pat one more question. I believe you told me this morning that the head of the faculty senate has called an all-faculty meeting for today. What do they hope to get out of that?
I think they're pretty much going to do the same thing that happened last night, which is discussion of the issues that have come up surrounding this cartoon, which is not only the racism from the cartoon, but what does this say about the rest of the campus? What led to this? You know, is there an underlying racism in the campus and in the community? What should be done about this? Are, you know, faculty members ignoring potential incidents of racism? You know, what can be done about this?
See, if I was, I would say this really quickly, and that is that if I'm a good Cuomo watcher, I bet this is going to be one that Andrew Cuomo gets involved in. His relationship with the State University of New York has been more than anything we've ever seen.
All right,
a lot of people think he's running it, and then of course he's got Carl McCall as the chairman of the board of trustees of SUNY. So I think it's going to have wings that take it far beyond Plattsburgh.
Well, Pat Bradley is our North Country bureau chief, and Pat will have a full story on this at Midday Magazine, which starts at noon here on WMC. Pat, thanks for sharing a few minutes with us.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Beautiful. And now, Rosemary, back to your point that you were making about independence in
journalism. Yeah, I mean, Alan is right. I do see a bunch of state officials who are going to stomp all over this and say, okay, we're going to control the press. That means you have a racism in that community and school, which is a problem, and you're going to have a censored press. I don't see the value of that. Why did those kids who were smart enough to run a paper not see a problem in
it? Because they were raised in the United States of America. Let's face it.
I was raised in the United States of America. No, Rosemary was.
Let's not talk about exceptions. I don't want to talk about exceptions. I want to talk about
this is the exception, Barbara. We're not seeing these kinds of cartoons rampantly in student newspapers across New York State. This stands out as a rarity.
Right. But the thing is, if you dig into, there are many manifestations and many signs and indications that people have discomfort around racial issues and or are not aware of what all of this means, because as I said, they're raised in the United States of America. There is very little opportunity for young people in this age group and others and other age groups to find out true, accurate information about the racial history of this country and also what does race mean socially, scientifically.
So that this
just not available.
This horrible mistake is actually a very teachable moment.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, good. Good. Okay.
If I
Keep
could
going.
Say it.
I'll
yeah.
shut up.
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to say. And I have a recommendation for people. Like, this is what I would do if I was on this campus. I've been on that campus. I've spoken on that campus on more than one occasion. And the thing is that what I would do is that I would assign a book that I've recently read that I think is one of the best books for people to begin to have a grasp of this topic, and it's called Waking Up White. It's by Debbie Irving. She is a person who grew up with quite a bit of class privilege as a WASP, self-described WASP, in Massachusetts. It wasn't until she was in her late 40s, early 50s, which was only in 2009, that she began to understand what's going on in this country. And she is so self-revealing. She is so disarming. She is so just clear about, this is what I found out. The chapters are short. They're like exercises at the end of every chapter. So like it's a 3-page, 5-page chapter, and then about a particular thing, and then she asks you questions about it so that you can actually engage with it. But this subliminal, you know, racism that drives our...
I don't think that was too subliminal.
No. But the thing is, like, somehow somebody who's like, let's say, average college student age, 18 to 22, who never grew up in the Jim Crow America, who never grew up in Jim Crow America, who probably grew up in the Northeast, even in upstate New York, somehow this person, when they grew a cartoon, they somehow did something that could have been created in the 19th century in Mississippi.
Yes, and by the way, I just want to point out, if people are going to go online and look at it, it's on the front page. It takes up a good part of the
plastic.
Barbara,
will
you say the name of the book and the author again, please?
Oh, yes. It's called Waking Up White. And the author is named Debbie Irving.
Okay.
She was here in September doing professional development for two staffs at two Albany public schools. I was privileged to attend the professional development, although, of course, I'm not employed by the school district, but I was welcome to come. And she's doing some remarkable work. That's just one example, but very accessible for people.
By the way, the paper is the Cardinal Points. It's not the Plattsburgh Press Republican. This is the college paper at Plattsburgh, Cardinal Points, and you should be able to find it online.
I want to go back to Barbara for 1 minute now because something's still irking me.
Oh,
she is right about one thing. There is a patina, a strand of racism in America, but you would not see this in the New York Times, and you certainly wouldn't see it even in the stinking New York Post.
Okay.
Those are professional papers.
So here's an example. I have a perfect example for you, Alan. No, you wouldn't see this cartoon in the New York Times, but when the TV show How to Get Away with Murder began last season, this season, there was someone who works for the New York Times who saw fit to write about how she was not... The actor, Viola Davis, who portrays the main character, that she's not, she's not conventionally beautiful. She talked about how the subject matter of the article, though, was how Shonda Rhimes was an angry black woman. I mean, black Twitter and other Twitter blew up over this. So the thing is, it may not be exactly, you know, racist cartoon on front page of New York Times, but someone, as I said, saw fit to write in the entertainment, you know, arts section about, you know, stereotypes.
Well,
about
you certainly won't hear me saying there isn't, and I didn't. So hold your letters. I didn't say there was no racism in America. Right?
Have a drink.
I will. I'll have a little coffee. Okay,
quickly, before we take a break, the editor, there are calls on campus. I talked to Pat this morning early for this editor to resign.
Don't you think the president of this place, of Plattsburgh, is shivering in the presidential boots right now?
No, because it's separated from him. But what about the
no,
editor?
No, it's not separated.
Should the editor step down? A college kid who obviously made a very, very, very big mistake.
I remember when Newpaltz put the first sex conference together, and the president shortly thereafter, and George Pataki went crazy, and shortly thereafter, the president was dismissed.
I don't know that resigning and punishing the editors would get us to where we need to go. Where I want to go always with these issues is I want people to be more informed, better, have a better heart, better consciousness, and be more enlightened. So I would get people, it's an institution of higher learning. Let's learn something about why this was not appropriate, why it is painful and hurtful to your classmates, because there are black students on that campus. It's not like they're on an asteroid somewhere that this does not affect them. Okay. And when you find out what's in the, it's like those fraternity, you know, those fraternity incidents that have happened within the last year. I mean, just egregious. And of course, because they're organizations, they can say, okay, you're nullified. You no longer exist officially on this campus. But as I said, I always prefer light as opposed to heat. So instead of firing her.
I think that's really smart. Yeah. She is a student. It would be far more enlightening for her and for the campus if she were to instead write about how this happened and the effect on her. The apology the paper put out, it's meaningless. It looks like lawyer talk to me. It doesn't get at what really happened and what she learned from it. They also should change the way they advise. Obviously, they need some help before they go to publication.
And maybe they'll be discussing that today. Let's take a break. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York. Offering custom framing and local art in the capital region, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. The Habitat for Humanity Restore, 70 Fuller Road, Albany. Offering gently used furniture, appliances, building materials, and more. Donations accepted. HabitatCD.org/restore. And Kimlin Propane. Installing and providing propane services for homes and businesses throughout Ulster, Orange, and Sullivan counties. KimlinPropane.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. I'm informed it's Friday morning. It's 10 minutes before 10 o'clock. Rosemary Armeo is here, Barbara Smith, Alan Shartok, and Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Any email to run through there?
We do. Ted says, Rosemary, because they are students, they should be given a pass. There is an age limit on this kind of stuff. Ildo says, she just sent us a copy of the cartoon.
Oh, thank you.
Very good.
Well, we have that.
And Ken says, classic white privilege, quote, we have a small staff, abridged version, should probably read, we have a small exclusively white staff. We don't know that, do we? Does anybody
we do
know?
Not.
No, I don't know.
No, we don't know that, but it would be interesting to find out.
Well, right.
I suspect we will find out.
Right. David says, live interview with Pat Bradley in Plattsburgh. Great work this morning doing a live interview and even having Pat take questions from the panel. I'd love to hear more live interviews like this, which include the panel. And that's DK from Williams.
Well, all right, DK.
Okay, exactly. And DK also says,
one to a customer, DK.
I know, but I graduated from Plattsburgh. There's a general disdain for downstate and a phobia of New York City, and there's a shade of racism at the college. Not surprising. Well, and then I guess that's it for now.
Okay. Once again, the email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Next week's primetime GOP presidential debate will feature just 8 candidates. Only 8. Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee have learned that they'll be bumped to the undercard event, along with Rick Santorum and Bobby Jindal, and George Pataki and Lindsey Graham have been cut from the lineup altogether. Debate sponsor Fox Business Network says, who takes part in the debate and depends on how they rank in the latest poll. So they have put the cutoff at 8 for the main stage and 4 for the undercard. Pataki and Graham, goners.
So there's a wonderful folk song by Christine Lavin, you know, What Could He Have Been Thinking? And it's all about, it's a great song and great things in history, like when Prince Harry put on a Nazi uniform, what could he have been thinking, you know, that kind of thing. And I keep thinking, you know, what could George Pataki have been thinking in getting in and staying in this? Less than 1% all along. Well, I project myself into his pardon. I say, well, you know, if I could be governor of of New York State for three terms, I can certainly be a presidential candidate, but less than 1%? That's something.
I think this whole thing puts the media in the very uncomfortable position of being a political arbitrator. You know,
yeah.
How come we get to cut them off? Why isn't the Republican Party doing that? I'm very uneasy about this. I think the Republicans are kind of nuts to be going through this whole debate thing again. It didn't work for them with Mitt Romney, and it seems to be hurting them again this time.
I think you make a point. And why is it a network, any network, whether it be CNBC or Fox or any of those networks, to say who is on there?
Yeah, I think they should put them all on. And if it's a messy, ugly debate, that's not on them. That would be at least fair.
It's so strange, though, because I'm trying to figure out, is it this way because there's so many candidates, or is it because there's so many venues that want to have debates? I don't get it. I really don't understand.
Well, I mean, you make a point. The ratings for the Republican debates have been very good.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For the Democratic one, too. They were also very high, right? It's not just Republicans.
Same thing about elections. You get people turning out in elections when you have a contest. And here you have a contest, you know, in the debate. So a lot of people are watching it. They're watching it for the right reasons. And, of course, they're watching it for the wrong reasons,
right,
which is, you know, this is gladiators.
Watch Trump blow up or something.
To be honest with you, I think the whole idea of an undercard, a little kid's table with four candidates from the beginning, from all the debates, was not a very fair plan.
What do you want, 18 people standing
on the stage? What? If that's how many they have, it's the party's own fault for putting out that many.
No, the party didn't get to decide. Anybody can run.
Well, the party can certainly put pressure on those who aren't doing too well
to
say, maybe it's time to get out.
I do think it's the Republican Party, but Alan is right, too. This is like Survivor, you know, that TV show that's going on. This is exactly what we have. Who will be voted off the podium?
I was thinking of the Hunger Games.
I like
Games,
it.
Not that I've seen it, but this seems
my kids watch it a lot. I only see it in
the
passing.
The book is great.
There were a lot of letters. We can't read them all, but
so
we can read one from Alice, who says, I didn't hear the whole conversation right now, a minute ago, but just came into the room in time to hear Rosemary, it was a lawyer, it was just lawyer talk. No matter what, that's just nasty. And only perpetuates how some people feel about lawyers, and it's wrong. Just wait until you need one, and 99% of them are honest and helpful, and that's from Alice.
I don't think you were taking a shot.
That was not at all.
Basically, and since you walked in, Alice, and you didn't really hear what was the discussion.
Right.
The student paper at Plattsburgh, the editors
put out an empty promise that was probably penned by lawyers.
It was one paragraph long, and it was
rather
clinical.
The lawyers did a great job. Yes. I love lawyers.
Okay, good.
I don't always love lawyers. I like lawyers when they're good, and I don't like them when they're, you know, not good.
Profound, indeed.
Well, Thurgood Marshall was a lawyer. He changed the country for the good. People who use the law to change the country in directions they should go fine.
Roy Cohn was a lawyer also.
Okay.
May I ask something? Did anyone see this video that I haven't seen yet of Christie talking about drugs?
Yes. It's fabulous. No. It's the first time I ever liked him. He says, addiction should be treated like what it really is, a disorder. We need to have compassion. And it's a growing movement. There are now police chiefs who are joining together saying, we're not going to talk about junkies anymore. These are people.
Well, in
Albany, he's fabulous.
In Albany, we have made a commitment to having something called LEAD, which is Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion.
Right.
And that's from the Drug Policy Alliance. So, at least we're doing that.
I'd be interested in your opinion of it, because I read it and I looked at it and I was pretty impressed with it. I think he comes across as compassionate.
Oh, yeah, I really want to see the video, because it would be the first time I liked him.
I want to see the results. I personally want to see the results. I mean, I think it's great that they're trying different things and keeping people out of prison. I think that's wonderful. But on the other hand, you know, if people are going to commit themselves to a life of drug addiction and are going to start robbing and maiming and hurting, I think, that has consequences also.
I don't think that's what they're talking about.
No.
I think they're talking about, let's look at drug addiction as an illness.
It is.
Treat it, as it should be, and give people alternatives to the situation that they're in, so that they can be productive and nonviolent members, of our society.
Well, nobody can argue with that.
As we criminalize them, we don't really achieve very much.
Nobody can argue with that. However, there are unforeseen consequences that happen in drug addiction, and to ignore them, is not a good idea. And in other words, I am for everything you're talking about, but I'm also for, and I'm not for sending people to prison, but there are other ways to basically say you should not hit anybody over the head in order to get drugs.
Well, there's already a law against hitting someone over the head, by the way. Why are we – I mean, we have 30 seconds. Okay. We have started a whole new topic.
Well, good.
We need another show now. We need another hour.
Okay.
I guess we'll be back on Monday.
Fair enough.
Or next hour.
Fair enough. All right. Any other – we have time for one more letter there, Al.
Al, you call me Al?
Yeah.
Nobody calls me Al. Okay. It's a problem now, says on drugs, now says Nancy, because it's a middle-class white problem.
Interesting.
That's it. Dead silence on the radio. Oh, my goodness.
Why don't we mention that
we're going to be live next week?
You know what?
Right?
You're thinking like a showbiz person now. Yes, a week from today, we have a live roundtable panel over at the Linda. Very exciting. Barbara will be there. Rosemary, you're there, right?
Yes.
Has that been sold out yet?
I do not know. So if it's been sold out, we won't talk about it. Alan is there. I'll be there. Joe will be there. And various others. Yeah?
Right.
Spain will be there.
Mike Spain will be there?
Yeah.
All right. So that is a brilliant idea, Barbara. Great forward promotion. Thanks to Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, Alan Shartok, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Hour two is on the way.